Now would be the time if any member of the public would like to comment on a public a consent calendar item. Now would be the time to approach the podium.
Good evening, Council. Jeff Hosslin, resident. Item number two, which is the vegetation, I believe is on consent, correct? Just want to go through the thing that we go through every time, is if we can maybe shorten the mailing off that we're not sending it to people with concrete, that would be great, such as the police station. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And I forgot to ask, any member of the council wish to pull a consent calendar item for discussion? Okay. All right, thank you. With that, we can bring it back to council. I believe we have our fire marshal who could answer that question, but I'm going to say off the top of my head, we send out notices to about 6,000 to 7,000 parcels out of the 11,000 parcels in the city. So there are many parcels that are do not receive a notice. So I don't know if anything you would like to add, Fire Chief or Fire Marshal?
I think that's a good answer. We sent out about 6,300 this year. So out of over 11,000 parcels, a big piece of the city will receive that letter.
Okay. All right, thank you. And with that, we'll bring it back to council for any discussion or a motion.
I'll move approval of the consent calendar.
Okay. I'll second.
Okay, we have a any discussion? Okay, we have a motion by Councilmember Funk, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Darras. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Peak?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Darras?
Yes.
And Mayor Warbeau?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, thank you. With that, we will proceed to updates from the city manager.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of council. Good to see you tonight. I'm really pleased to share a huge highlight. I was absent at the last council meeting because your zoo director and Ms. Banish and I were preparing at this hour to speak to the board of the AZA accreditation group the next day. And I'm pleased to share that we have received a full accreditation for an additional 5 years, which is a huge, yes, definitely worthy of that, huge accomplishment. And there's a wonderful picture. I really appreciated the community coming out this weekend. And there you all are celebrating that accreditation in our zoo that we love. The zoo's been accredited for over 30 years now, having first achieved accreditation back in 1991. There are currently 251 AZA accredited zoological institutions out of 2,500 in the world. So that's 10% of institutions are accredited. In the zoo industry, and I think there's a question, why? This is such an effort, such a process. Why are we accredited? Why do we be accredited? It is the gold standard for animal care and welfare. And I think people today especially have different opinions of zoos and seeing animals in their exhibits and that sort of thing. And so when you're accredited, you are sending a message that your animals have the utmost best care. You're part of the species' survival. You're actually helping study the animals and their behaviors and contributing to research that help animals in the wild survive. We're actually breeding animals to return to the wild. So you're part of a larger thing. And it shows a commitment to animal welfare and conservation-mindedness. You also are eligible for a number of funding and grant opportunities that you would not be eligible for if you were not accredited. And something I learned recently as well is that the USDA also manages zoos and other, if you have animals, you have to be licensed. And Congress continues to pass rules that have oversight of animal collections and that sort of thing. But if you're an accredited zoo, most often you're waived from those laws and those requirements because you've gone through this rigorous inspection. So it's something we can feel very good about. And if you, you know, care about the earth, you care about animals, you care about the environment, being an accredited zoo means you're top-notch and focused on all those things. So congratulations to the Charles Panic Zoo, and thank you, Council, for your investment. Without your investment and actions, it was clear to us this would not have happened. So thank you for your leadership. Next slide. This week will be a big week for the El Camino Real project, and I've talked about how there's a few hills and a few humps that we're working to get over as we work through this. We are working towards a June completion, and which is what we said. We started the day after school got out, and we darn near wanted to be done near then, and we have a couple big, big efforts. So work continues to include pavers and landscaping between Colony Cinema, Huckleberries, and Traffic Way. And then in the median between K-Rails and El Camino and Traffic Way and Rosario, there's concrete work and curbs, planters, trenching still going on. That's the heavier work north of Traffic Way. Installation may also continue to include the pendant lighting poles and the lighting itself, which will be really neat. We're starting to get into those finishing touches. The pavers look terrific. We'll be installing rock in the drainage planters on El Camino near the 101 ramp at Rosario, and the underground electrical work on El Camino Real. So this next week will continue to seem like it has. However, the following week, and this is a real milestone, we've really tried to be smart with this project. And I know it's disturbing, but believe it, I know you do. We've really tried to manage to deadlines and to take advantage of opportunities when they arise. Next week is spring break in Atascadero. Schools will be out of session. We were really trying to manage to be able to pave El Camino next week while there are not people taking their kids to school, because paving is a disruptive activity. And so to minimize impacts, we're thrilled that beginning Monday, we'll be doing road milling, paving, and concrete work and pavers in the area between 41 and Traffic Way. And so there will be detours in effect. They will be well signed. This is the best time to do this while people aren't trying to get to school. We'll continue communicating with businesses. Staff met with businesses today. I know we have some meetings tomorrow regarding improvements. We're always talking to us. If some people are struggling, you know, we have an expert on our staff that's giving a bunch of advice on advertising, promotions, talking with your landlord. So we do care, and we are advising businesses on how to work through this because we're so, so close. So as always, please be mindful of bicyclists and pedestrians, but next week will be a big week. Our next slide, our full-service police department is bringing on the cheer this year. This is pretty neat. The police department will have photos with the Easter Bunny. The Easter Bunny thinks so highly of our police department, he has decided to hop into Atascadero and take pictures with our families. So for 2 hours on the 13th, you come right on down and get your picture with the Easter Bunny. Appreciate that, Chief Suttles. Great outreach for us. The zoo will be hosting Party for the Planet, so back to these high-level conservation things. Join us on April 19th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. This is an Earth Day celebration filled with conservation and learning. They'll be terrific. And experience interactive adventures, hands-on activities, exhibits, and a lot of great things. So general zoo admission is required, but it is free once you handle that. All that stuff you've been accumulating on the next slide, the Atascadero Citywide Yard Sale is taking place April 26th. So this is a really, really great opportunity to find things, or I hope my family's on the selling side of things, not gaining things. This is a great time to find a gift or get rid of your stuff. You need to register your location by April 12th if you want to be on the map and register your household for this. But this is a great opportunity that our recreation team puts together. And also to get rid of stuff, the Waste Drop-Off and Paper Shedding Week is coming April 19th through 26th. And due to the council's action a couple weeks ago, no voucher is required. So you just come on in to the address there at the Slo County Transfer Station on the Cruise Way in Templeton. This is near Tin City, that area. And you just come right on in, bring your picture ID and a copy of your bill. That is what you need to bring to show that you're a customer. And you can drop off your paper shreddings, your waste, all the things, including household waste, scrap metal, organic waste, paper products, et cetera. So another great opportunity. And for any other information, you can always go to visit atascadero.com. And for city-related business, atascadero.org. That concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. And before we ask if there's any questions for Mr. Lewis, I would note that while his voice is much better than it was on Sunday at the zoo, where he could barely whisper, you can still tell he's still suffering. So with that in mind, does any member of the council have a question for Mr. Lewis? All right. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it. And appreciate the constant updates on the El Camino Real project, because obviously that is a thing of constant discussion on social media amongst our community. And you guys are doing a very good job at trying to keep businesses in particular informed, and it's great to see the progress that's occurring. So, okay, with that, we will move on to community forum. And community forum is reserved for persons wanting to address the council on any matter not on the agenda this evening, but over which the council has jurisdiction. The Brown Act prohibits the council from discussing matters not on the agenda, but the council may, at its discretion, ask staff to contact a speaker regarding an issue raised during community forum, or we may ask a quick question of staff. Okay, speakers are limited to 3 minutes, and we ask that you state your name for the record, please. So anybody wishing to speak in community forum, please approach the podium.
Good evening. Mayor and council members, I'm Susan Warren. I am with North County Connection, which is located here in Atascadero. We're a recovery resource center, and I wanted to give you an update on our programs. I was here a month or so ago to tell you about the excitement that we had from our grant, where we've been able to bring in recovery navigators. We have operated with all volunteers for probably the last 15 years. So it's our outreach has been difficult because we're doing everything on site. But at this point, we had two recovery navigators, Wendy Blacker and Caitlin Wilkerson. They are both certified for two different programs, new programs that we're offering, and that's the Smart Recovery Program, which is kind of a education, behavior changing about addiction and any other behaviors that you want to change, and it's built more on education rather than what we do focus on, which is providing a space for the various anonymous meetings, and we have a wide variety of those. And the SMART recovery is about building and maintaining motivation, coping with urges, managing the thoughts and behaviors and feelings, and learning how to live a balanced life. And they've been doing this for about 3 months now, and we're getting really great reviews on it. Everybody's really liked it and felt like it's helped them understand the positive direction that they need to go. And the other one is Wendy's certified Narcan trainer, and I know she works with the APD and make sure they have Narcan, and we have plenty of it so that we can give it out to anybody in the community that would like to have it, whether it's a business or individuals, family members, whoever. They can contact us and come in and get as much as they need. And we also, North County Connection, offers family-friendly support, and we really work on bringing in these anonymous programs to help the families during these difficult times with an addicted loved one. And we have the only two Naranon meetings between Santa Barbara and Salinas, and they are well attended, and lots of parents that have kids out there that are homeless or in and out of jail, and it really helps provide the family some encouragement and stability and understanding how to deal with these difficult issues. And we're in the process of also adding a Families Anonymous, because sometimes it's just mental health issues or behavior issues, and that will be specific to that. Now, I'm here tonight because last week we were notified that Sierra Health, which is where we got our grant, has had their funding pulled. So, as of the 24th of this last month, we will not have that funding for our navigators. And they have graciously volunteered. They believe so much in the SMART recovery and the Narcan training that they're going to continue to do that.
Susan,
and offer those.
I could ask you to wrap it up because you are
sure.
Past your 3 minutes.
Okay. And my big question is here, who in the city can I talk to about the opioid settlement funds? Because we would like to apply for some of those funds to help us keep these recovery navigators.
All right. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. We'll hold questions until the end.
Sure.
Ask staff at the end to perhaps address questions. Okay, who's next? Who would like to speak at community forum?
Hi, good evening. My name is Jennifer Adams. I'm the CEO with Lumina Alliance. I appreciate the time, Mayor Burbo and council members. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and so I thought I would take this opportunity to just share a little bit about what's happening at Lumina Alliance. For those of you that don't know, Lumina Alliance was created in 2021 out of a merger between RISE, which was mainly here in the North County, and the Women's Shelter Program in San Luis Obispo. And so we are now a countywide organization, the only one serving victims of sexual assault and domestic violence. We provide a 24-hour crisis and information line, advocacy and accompaniment, legal referrals, emergency shelters, one of which is right here in Atascadero, transitional housing, self-sufficiency services, individual and group therapy, and comprehensive prevention programs. Last year, Lumina Alliance, our advocates and volunteers, answered more than 2,000 calls on the crisis line, housed 171 people in our shelters. 40% of them were children, and provided over 4,200 hours of therapy. And these are all for victims and their loved ones. Sexual Assault Awareness Month is a time dedicated to uniting communities to fight to end sexual violence. This year, we're shining a light on the resilience of survivors and often overlooked realities in our community. While anyone can experience sexual assault, some groups, including undocumented individuals, transgender people, and those living with disabilities, face unique barriers to support and access for help. This April, we affirm our commitment to ensuring that every survivor is seen, heard, and empowered. Together, we're illuminating pathways to a future where all survivors have the resources and support they need to heal. Unfortunately, those resources are at high risk at this time, as Sue shared. We are facing unprecedented cuts to our funding. 47% of our $5 million budget comes from federal funding sources, two of those grants, which we've already lost, which will impact our shelter services and our transitional housing. We've launched a Light the Way campaign, which is, the goal is to raise $5 million over the next 3 years in order to try to offset those losses. We hope the community will get involved and join in those efforts to help save these life-saving resources that we provide to victims. I'll end on a fun note. is another way to get involved is that Lumina Nights is our big fundraiser featuring Dancing with Our Stars, which was so lovely gifted to us from the city, from the volunteers that ran that lovely event. So it is happening May 1st, 2nd, and 3rd here at the Lake Pavilion. And one of our star dancers is none other than your previous mayor, Heather Moreno, now new district supervisor. So there are still tickets available. You can go to luminaalliance.org to purchase tickets. We would love to see you there. Please remember, if anyone you know is experiencing sexual or intimate partner violence and needs help, to call the 24-hour crisis line at 805-545-8888 to speak with a confidential advocate. And just thank you again for the time and attention. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Good evening, Council. Jeff Oslin once again. Let's start with the zoo. I'm glad our city manager clarified why accreditation is so important. Of course, any funding is great that's not taking it out of the city coffers. Then anything we can do to expand visitation to the zoo obviously helps a lot. My family was there on Sunday to celebrate the accreditation, and I've been going to the Charles Paddock Zoo since 1981. This is the first time the zoo didn't stink. This is the first time the water looked clean. This is the first time the zoo was in tip-top shape in all these years. So there's a lot of thank yous to our new director and everybody else involved in the Charles Paddock Zoo, that we really have a gold mine here in the city of Atascadero. And despite some of the media that likes to be negative, I think those members that are negative in the media should show up at the zoo and see what's really going on. We were mesmerized by the spider monkeys playing around. It was incredible. Of course, everything was active in the afternoon. It must have been feeding time. But it was really fun to actually see all the animals in a clean environment. And I don't think that's been that way in a long time. So kudos to our city and our staff, and of course the volunteers and everybody that donates to the zoo. Fabulous to see that we're on the right track. Being I'm on the world of smashing the media, which I don't care about, we had a negative comment and press on our police chief that was unfounded on a incident of a, obviously a child who died in a Tascadero. I will tell you hands down that every first responder and all the students in the school district, along with the teachers, were very saddened, and our community members. And I don't think there's anything that was done wrong by any of our staff and what they did and how they approached the situation. And what people need to realize, and of course the media likes to get things wrong because they don't want to wait, we are better off to have a press release that is right rather than misinformation. So I definitely give kudos to all of our first responders. And with that being said, we had another incident where a young child was ran over by a vehicle, and our first responders and APD did a fantastic job. I believe that was today. The young man only had a broken leg. When it was all said and done, it was on a private property. So congratulations once again to all our first responders. They do a great job. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any other speakers? Yes, please broach.
Yeah, my name is Robbie Busick. I was born and raised in Atascadero, spent 18 years here. My parents have been here for 50 years, longtime residents. Fortunate enough to just move back last year, and my comment or concern is to try to bring awareness to the lack of playing fields for youth sports. Being gone for 25 years, I quickly realized that they haven't changed. and it was kind of an eye-opener, like, wow, you know, like we have Paloma Park, and that's pretty much what we've got for soccer. I'm kind of highlighting soccer specific because that was my sport growing up. And I coach my daughter's club team. She's 12, and my son's club team, he's 8. My son's team's fortunate to have a private turf residence that we can practice at. And my daughter's team practiced in Atascadero last year, and we actually moved the whole team to San Luis Obispo in part to lack of playing fields. You know, I'd see a lot of other cities and towns kind of catching up and providing better opportunities for their kids, and I feel like we need to probably catch up to that. Just last year, I think there was over 700 registered youth soccer participants, and seeing them play on any available field, lacking size, lacking, you know, the basic needs to have them be successful is something I hope that we can look at. My dad sat on the committee to do the Trafficway softball fields a long time ago. And so one of the quotes that I kind of stand by is like, don't complain about something you're not willing to change. So this is the first step, is just to say, hey, you know, I moved here. I want to help. What can we do? And so that question is like, you know, long term, what does the development look like? I know that there's been talks about expanding Paloma to the state hospital zone. That's maybe an option, maybe not. Is there other areas of improvement? So what does the future big development look like? And then what else can we do short term as far as improving the current playing structure, right? My son plays rec baseball in Monterey Road. The playing surface, gopher holes everywhere. A lot of elderly grandparents have to walk close to a quarter mile to even get to the fields. Uneven surfaces, there's no sidewalks, they can't park close. And I'm just taking a step back going like, my parents are 78 years old. They shouldn't have to deal with that. You know, we should have a better facility for them to watch their grandkids play. Just want to create awareness to that, speak up for our youth. It's important that we invest in them. And I was lucky enough to have a good opportunity to play sports here, and I'd like to see our city catch up. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, anybody else wishing to speak in community forum? If not, we'll close community forum and bring it back. I wanted to make a couple of comments. Sue, we thank you for all the work you do. And Mr. Lewis, I think, can address the status of the opioid settlement. I believe we let that stay with the county for them to utilize.
Yeah, countywide. Let me ask Ms. Rangel, actually, could you give more specifics? We aren't going to be a direct recipient of it, but I'll let you share.
That is correct. We have deferred those opioid funds to the county because they are better able to use those more efficiently than we would here.
Okay, and for perspective, can you say how much that is on an annual basis? Because when you spread it out, it isn't that much on an annual basis.
No, I want to say...
It was low five figures. Yeah. It was going to take us more to process it, frankly, which is why we submitted it back to the county.
Right, and all the other cities did as well, correct? I think all but one.
Don't know that. I mean, okay. Most did.
Okay, thank you. And I want to say a special thank you out to Jenny Adams for speaking regarding Lumina. I used to be on the board of RISE, but, it is unfortunate that we need an organization like this to deal with sexual assault and sexual violence. But we do. Just like every community in America, we have that problem. Wish we could say we don't, but we do. And we thank them for having the women's shelter in particular in Atascadero and all the services they provide and the work they do with our police department to help facilitate things for victims like restraining orders, et cetera. And it's really an important thing that they make available in our community. Okay, but I wanted to express that. Anything else? Anybody? Okay, then thank you all, and we will close community forum, as I said, and we will move on to our next item, which is a public hearing, which is item B1 regarding extended occupancy for hotels and motels. And we will turn this over to our community development director, Mr. Phil Dunsmore.
Good evening, Mayor. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council. Zoning is something that is ever evolving. Land uses are always changing, things are always happening, and we're always trying to react to those changes. And that's what we're looking at here tonight, is a change to our policies that is reacting to the way the market's changing. Over the past few years, let's see if I can get this to advance a bit. Here we go. What we've really seen is a change in the hotel market, and it's a change to a larger quantity of longer-term stays in the community. Traditionally, hotels and motels are in commercial zoning districts, and our commercial zoning districts are generally reserved for commercial land uses unless you've got an approved mixed-use project, which is generally residential above commercial. Now, when a hotel starts to have stays that exceed 30 days, essentially what that is an apartment building. It's something that really is a different animal. It's a different land use. And we have to acknowledge that. One of the biggest issues with that is when these stays do exceed that 30 days, we can no longer collect the transient occupancy tax, the TOT. So in recent years, we've noticed this has been happening. And so now it's time to actually address it and actually come up with a policy that creates a new land use and creates some alternatives to, in some limited fashion, allow this to happen. And that's because these hotel owners, they need this to happen in order to make ends meet in today's market. They've got to have some percentage of this. Some of them do, and some of them have been designed to sort of operate this way. And it's sort of the trend of what's happening. We're seeing the need for traveling nurses, contractors that stay in town for long periods of time, and other workers that need to have these things happening. In fact, I was I was just looking for something like this myself for my son, as he just got a job out in the Central Valley this summer, and only is going to stay there for 5 months. And I thought, I'll start looking for extended stay hotels. And I caught myself doing that, going, wait a minute, that's probably not a good idea. But instead, I found him a room in a house. So there is those options as well. So we are proposing some code updates tonight. Among those is really providing this new definition for an extended occupancy hotel, motel, and establishing an administrative use permit process to allow that to happen. And in that process, creating standards for those, which basically have limitations, having an action plan if these limitations and standards aren't met. And then at the same time, refining our kitchen allowances. Now, last year, we already modified our kitchen allowances for hotels, and we already allow some percentage of kitchens in some hotels. This would change that a little bit and have a greater allowance for those that actually do get their extended occupancy agreement. Now, the main thing about these use permits, they would come along with, each one would have a separate agreement, and that would stipulate all of these conditions. And this use permit would also come along with a 3% fee on all of these particular units. And what we call that is really a use permit fee. So there's the standard application fee for a use permit, but then there's this ongoing fee for an extended stay hotel. Now that 3% fee is quite small, doesn't come anywhere near making up for what would be the transient occupancy tax had this been a regular hotel. But again, this is a compromise. This is a way to try and say, let's limit these, let's put a policy on these, let's put a discretionary review process in for these, and let's make sure that we have a land use that's actually operating in compliance with the code. And that's the biggest issue. Right now, someone who is operating a long-term stay in a commercial district in a hotel is not in compliance with our zoning. And so that's not a good thing. And then, so tonight, the other portion is adoption of a revised fee schedule to include this fee. So a couple of policy changes that are being recommended. Now, this went to the Planning Commission. They made a recommendation, and that was introduced for first reading. The draft ordinance that would amend Title IX, adding this as a separate land use, modifying the definitions for it, and providing standards. Now, we have suggested one slight change since then that came up at the Planning Commission. I'll show you that. And then a separate resolution would adopt this 3% administrative use permit fee. Now, there is a word change that's being proposed. I think it's shown in your staff report as well. I'll just read this section. The operator must enter into agreement with the city that sets forth the conditions of extended occupancy that includes but is not limited to an extended occupancy fee payable by the operator for each day of occupancy, and then deleting over 30 days or portion thereof. Penalties for non-compliance and maximum length of occupancy. The agreement will be recorded against the property. As usual, we have a set of alternatives, three alternatives. You can recommend modifications. We can determine that more information is needed, or we can decide to do something else entirely. But for now, I'm here to answer your questions, and hopefully I've described that to you in a clear enough fashion. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Dunsmore. First, I'll start on my left, see if we have any questions from council members.
Just for the record, the hotels and the tourism board, they're aware of this, and to what extent are they in favor of it?
We've had several meetings and invited all of the hotel owners from our city, not only through TBID, the tourism board, but also just on a general nature. And they do express some support for this. They were notified about this hearing tonight, and they were aware of this hearing tonight. I don't know that we have a whole lot of attendance from them, but I think we did address their concerns through these separate meetings prior to this.
Thank you.
I'd like to add, if I may, on that. This is really a show of the council's approach to being business friendly and creative. This whole issue came about as a result of responsible audits the city was doing, realizing that most all of our hotels were operating in a way that was not consistent with our code. Some cities might have just cited them or came down on them, as opposed to really listening and understanding the needs and seeing a cooperative venture, which I think this is, which is probably why we don't have many of them here. But that's a great question.
Thank you. Any questions from?
Thank you. I think City Manager Lewis just answered part of my question, but I want to ask. So, you know, I understand that if we have hotels in the process right now, and anybody coming in new would set up, if they're interested, 20% of their units to be able to do this type of thing. And current hotels, if they wanted to convert, they could, you know, again, 20%. But that's not to say that somebody couldn't stay in a room that doesn't have a kitchen or anything like that for longer than 30 days. I'm curious as to how is this going to be followed or regulated, or how are we going to know if somebody is not in compliance? And then if they are not in compliance and allowing people to stay longer than 30 days over and above the 20% that's allowed, what is the penalties, and how do we come up with that number or penalty or whatever?
So the penalty would be like any other code violation, and there are some provisions in this particular code also that address that separately. But how would we know? Well, we do our audits. That's how we found this particular scenario was happening. But we also, since we've now addressed this and invited all these hotel owners to come in and really talk to them about this whole situation and realize what's happening, we hope that we get voluntary compliance through offering this process. I will also say that hotels don't have to have kitchens in order to have a long-term stay, and some people will choose to stay long-term, eat out at our restaurants, which is great. So that's an option to have the kitchens, but the 20% is a cap based on the long-term stays as a percentage of these through this administrative use permit process. Hope that answers your question.
Yeah, well, mostly did, because I, like I said, you did, but you kind of went a little bit around it. Well, not really around it. I mean, I understand that if you had 20% of the rooms that have kitchens, like I said, you could have a room, a set of, I mean, hotel rooms that have no kitchens. And I know somebody would stay more than 30 days. But if more than 20% of your rooms were used, if somehow they went beyond that. But you answered the question, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Funk?
Yeah, a couple things. Following on Councilmember Darris' question, the cap is on the extended stays, not the rooms that, not the percentage of rooms that would be allowed for with kitchens. Is that correct?
That's right. But there's actually, there's caps on both. So there's caps on the limits to the numbers of kitchens, and there's caps on the overall maximum number of long-term stays that a hotel could have through the use permit process.
Okay, and that cap is done on an annual basis, right? So during the winter when they're not having as many tourists coming through, you know, they could allow more extended stays, and in the summer lot.
It's designed to be averaged out through the year.
Okay, that definitely would help our businesses. Is by doing this cap as proposed, will we put a limit then on the extent reducing our TOT by having so many more additional stays be extended stays? Does this sort of put a limit to that process?
The hope is that we don't reduce TOT, that we help people understand that what they might have been doing wasn't legal, and that we get less of that, and the ones that they are doing, you know, come into compliance with these conditions and have these limits and come through a process. So we hope to curb the overall number, to be honest with you, of the extended stays and kind of bring them into that court and bring them into this 3% fee program. And so the idea isn't to incentivize these things to happen, but more to limit them from happening, but understand that they're happening.
Yeah, but to do something that allows businesses to have that as part of their model so that they can survive and thrive in a challenging environment.
Yes.
Okay. One technical question. On page 103, there's a reference in the definitional sections that changing, you know, hotels and motels may have, it was full kitchens, and it's now that language has changed to kitchens that include cooking appliances. It's somewhere in the code, in, you know, building code or muni code, do we define what cooking appliances are in a way that means that, you know, your typical standard hotel room that might have a mini fridge, a coffee maker, and a microwave oven would not be considered as having a, you know, kitchen, if you will, in this, you know, with this definition.
That's right. So just having a refrigerator and a countertop isn't a kitchen. Most hotel units have those things now. They have an extra sink and a little, you know,
microwave,
wet bar and a fridge. That's not the kitchen. What we want is, and the wording here says, have kitchens that include cooking appliances. So it would have to have a cooktop, a fridge, and, you know, the sink in order to be considered a kitchen, to have to be limited to this 25%. So if they just have the, you know, the cool little fridge and the countertop and sink, that's not going to be limited to this.
And the microwave.
And the microwave, too. We got to have the microwave.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Enjoy those leftovers. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Newsom? Okay, thank you. I did have a follow-on question to that, though, because we have two categories here, regular hotels, motels, and then we talk about extended stay facilities. And we have some products nowadays, and I think we have a Residence Inn coming online. And in those hotel products, there's typically a kitchenette in every room, I think. So we're not limiting them to 25% of their rooms, right? We're limiting them to 20% of the revenue over the course of the year coming from extended stays. Is that correct?
The revenue is limited to 20%. The kitchens are limited to 25% through this process. There are some hotels that may have built before we had these methodologies in place, but I'm not sure that the Residence Inn has kitchens in all of its rooms. I don't believe that to be the case when that was recently reviewed for its remodel.
Okay, because because there are, you know, I believe there are products like Extended Stay America and these kinds.
There are other products like that.
Yeah, some sort of implied extended stay capability in their names, although, you know, they don't mean over 30 days. They mean like a week, 2 weeks, et cetera.
Could be 3 weeks. That's what I always thought that those meant.
I just want to make sure that, if a hotel like that wanted to be here, are we limiting the number of rooms in the facility, let's say in a 100-unit hotel, are we limiting the number of rooms that can physically have a kitchen with cooking appliances?
Yes.
Mr. Dunsmore, may I ask, clearly on the hotel motel that operates under the current zoning, we actually have hotels and motels at the 25%. My understanding is in the new language under the extended occupancy hotel in 9.6.186, if you go through this process, we don't limit how many kitchens you can have if you are applying to be an extended stay hotel. That was my understanding.
Thanks for the clarification. That's right. Sorry, I was getting a little confused there.
There's two different products.
Yes.
So
yes.
If you want to be a regular hotel and not have the extended stay, you can have no more than 25% of your rooms as kitchen. However, if you want to apply to be an extended stay, which is what your ordinance does tonight, there's a new process and there's a new way, and the percentage of rooms with kitchens, I don't believe, is capped. Mr. Dunsmore, is that correct?
That's correct. Thank you for the clarification.
I didn't see any cap in that piece of the language, and I wanted to be clear. And I think for the public to understand, as you mentioned in your initial comments, is if we allowed hotels, let's say, you know, the market declines, there's less travel or something, and it would be tempting for them to allow a lot of these long-term stays, what you now have is an apartment building. So having this overall limit gives them flexibility, especially in slower weeks and seasons, but ensures that, you know, hotels aren't turning into de facto apartment buildings.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. All right, thank you. If there are no further questions from council, I'm sorry, a follow-on question, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up on that. On page 103 above where I was, or actually in the same spot I was talking earlier, that references, this is for standard hotels and motels. The language says hotels and motels may have kitchens that include cooking appliances in up to 10% of the rooms or units. We were just discussing 25%. What am I missing here? Okay. So it's 10% without a use permit and up to 25% with a use permit. Is that correct?
That's right. And no limit if you actually fit the definition of extended stay. And that's, I guess, what I forgot to mention earlier. So there's the three different levels.
Okay, great. Thank you. That's what I wanted to be clear on, what the percentages were we were discussing.
Okay, thank you. With that, we'll see if there's any public comment on this item. Please approach the podium.
Of course, Jeff Oslin here. Three points, I guess. First of all, I think you would have a reduction in TOT, and the fees may make up for it. So I think when the accounting happens, you know, I don't believe it's a $50,000 net gain. I think it will be less than that, or it will be something different. So it's a question, have we really thought that through? Secondly, what's the maximum stay on these extended stays, because if you take Barrel Creek, for instance, we made sure that the deed restrictions state that they may not turn into apartments, and I think that's a concern that some of these hotels could turn into long-term apartments. So what's the max stay? Now, it's a good thing if your house burns down and you have a place to stay now and you don't have to move around every 30 days. That's a positive or a natural disaster. But I think those are some things that need to be considered. And what's 3%? 3% of the room that they do, whatever the fee is, or is it 3% times the 20% or 25%? Not quite sure on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other member of the public wishing to comment? So, I'll bring it back to council. I would ask a follow-on question as a result of that. So there is no upper limit in here? In other words, like 180 days or 120 days? There's no upper limit in this ordinance?
There is not. There is simply a statement here that the hotel cannot act as a residential apartment building. But there's not a set maximum term for that stay.
In general, these go, the economics of the marketplace in hotels will solve a lot of this, because by nature in the summers and on weekends when you're very busy, you can get a much higher rate than the long-term rate. Hotels will do that to keep you from having someone living in your hotel for months and months and months and months on and on and on. That's where the 20% overall revenue target starts to hit you, because that becomes a larger part of your revenue, at which you then pay 15%. Which is more than the 10% TOT. So we've tried to provide some flexibility. And part of this isn't so much about getting the revenue on the 20%, because clearly 10% is more than 3%. It's capping that and protecting the capacity of the TOT on the 80%, because right now there isn't a cap, and you're seeing communities where these are 30%, 35%. And so having a civil arrangement like this gives us further protection to collect the money. It also, some of the models for Residence Inns, Stay Bridges, Home Twos are, is part of their operating model, looking to these types of things. And they're legal under state law, but they weren't under ours, which puts our hotels at an operating disadvantage. And so we're really trying to find the best porridge, if you will, to be just right.
Okay, thank you. Also, I would guess that anytime you let somebody stay over 30 days, you're establishing a tenant relationship, which is some risk to the hotel. So they're, going to be careful about that, I assume. So. Okay, all right, any further discussion at council? If not, we're ready for a motion.
I think this is a constructive move forward that we've got. It evens the playing field. We've got for the hotels and motels that are in all these different commercial variations on a theme of commercial zoning right now. Some of them have different land use restrictions and so forth, and it puts everybody on a reasonable playing field and kind of normalizes the situation in a constructive way. So I would be prepared to move approval of staff's recommendation if other, but I can also wait if others would like to discuss it.
Moving approval of recommendations one and two to introduce the ordinance for first reading and to adopt a draft resolution.
Yes.
For establishing a 3%. I'm sorry, did you?
I said I'll second.
Okay, all right, thank you. Any discussion? Okay, no discussion. Let's have a roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Peak?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Daris?
Yes.
And Mayor Burwell?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
All right, thank you. And we no longer have to read the ordinance by title? Okay. Okay, thank you. With that, we will move on to our next item, which is a management report, C1, regarding aquatics program implementation for summer 2025. And I believe we're going to turn that over to our director, Terry Banish, to discuss.
Thank you, Mayor Burbeau and Council. I am going to invite up Rec Supervisor Ms. Larice Lopez to come to the podium to talk about our aquatics program and the implementation of it for summer of 2025.
It's a little tall there. Thank you, Terry. Thank you, Mayor Burbeau and council members for your time. And I'm going to go through this as painless as I possibly can. I'm not as experienced in these presentations, but so aquatics, everybody wants aquatics back, including, you know, our rec team. So we wanted to present to you tonight, this evening, we'll review how we are proposing to implement the aquatics program that will offer swim lessons, lap and rec swim, that we hope to kick off this summer. As we get started, we will provide a brief overview on what we used to offer with the aquatics program, why we stopped, and how we will be able to bring this back with the new Atascadero High School pool that opened last summer from the DE20 funding. So on slide number two, we have our history of the aquatics program. So the City of Atascadero's Recreation Division has always had a pretty popular swim program, prior to the pandemic, that is. So the city, we don't own...
I'm sorry, who's yes? controlling the slides? Because she mentioned slide number two.
I am. She's on slide two.
That's slide two. Okay. Yeah. Terry's on it. Thanks. Yeah.
Okay, good.
It's a partnership. So the as you all, I believe, know, the City of Atascadero does not own its own pool or aquatics facility. We have always been held to using the Atascadero High School pool, which has never really been a problem until we had the issue of it being condemned and just needing some major updates. But as most of you are probably aware now and have hopefully seen it yourself, we have a beautiful aquatics facility up at Atascadero High School now, and that pool was redone very well. And so we've never had a reason to really create another pool, because there's a pool in town that can be used, and usually we have a great partnership with the Atascadero Unified School District and the Atascadero High School staff. Programs in the past, though, were included open rec swim, which is everybody jump in the pool, swim and splash around, and we've got enough lifeguards around to kind of keep sight of everyone and make sure that everyone's safe, and we have our staff there available in case of emergency. We also would provide lap swim that was kind of more for the older population would come out and get their laps in, their reps in, get a good workout in the pool. And then we would also offer swim lessons. Some of them were like my mommy and me or daddy and me. We like to say parent and me now, so it's everyone feels like they can come and participate in the class with their 2-year-olds for the very younger groups. And then moving on to the level 1, 2, 3, and 4, where we teach the very basics of swim instruction, very basics of how not to drown, and then building up on, you know, developing their stroke, their form, and just overall swim development. So that was always very successful in the past. Each season, we would always encounter the challenge, though, of staffing due to the strict requirements that are required in being and becoming a lifeguard, and not just becoming a lifeguard, but also a swim instructor, a lifeguard instructor. But the biggest challenge to that has always been the high cost of acquiring those certifications. So going out, putting a call out for lifeguards, putting a call out for aquatics coordinators, it's always, you know, do we have local people who do have that certification? Let's see. In 2018, the recreation team reached out to Kennedy Club Fitness to migrate the classes to their pools and to their lifeguards, offering the same discounted rates that the residents and non-residents were used to receiving through the city's recreation programs. A year later, the high school pool was condemned and closed indefinitely, and all programs, including the high school programs, transferred over to Kennedy. Post-pandemic, Kennedy Club Fitness had to change their operations and no longer offered the swim program. So since the pandemic, we have not had an aquatics program that was available to our community. Last year, in May of 2024, the new pool officially opened up at the high school, and we've been working with the high school to implement the aquatics program that we once had. Plus, we've worked with the high school to train and certify, or become, sorry, I'm reading too much script. We've been working with the high school and with the school district on ways that we could potentially implement an elective course, an elective class that students could participate in where they would gain those certifications. They would gain the training necessary to become a lifeguard through the American Red Cross, like an actual real certification. And so that's conversations that had started and that we had hoped to kind of put together. So those are conversations that we continue to put to have happening. So this summer, we are working to kick off the new aquatics program beginning June 16th and running through August 8th, taking care of everyone during those hot seasons and before the kids go back to school, giving them a little bit of time to get in there. Swim lessons will be included, and we hope to also offer open rec swim, lap swim, the parent and me swim classes, and hopefully all lessons. We'll have things a little more dialed in on specific scheduling, but as you can see, we do have a pretty good schedule that we have planned, a baseline to start off of that we would really love to offer to our community, thinking that we're meeting everyone's needs as far as open rec swim, some lap swim, and also all the swim lessons, because you don't want to throw them in the pool before they've learned how to swim first. So we want to work to build up our staff so that we're able to do all of the above. For staffing, we're looking to hire an aquatics coordinator to be in place, working a full schedule during the summertime time frame, some light hours, other times outside of that, but really someone to come in, take charge, and build up not only our schedule, but build up our lifeguards that we'll have, someone that's able to supervise the lifeguards that also has all of the certifications and trainings that are necessary and required by law, and just for overall safety, so that we can be sure that we're running a good, safe program with everything that we need. As I mentioned, we've been talking with the school district and also the athletics department in hopes to really build up a program where we can get some of our local students, get them the training and the certifications necessary to become lifeguards, working in partnership with the school district to create not only swim opportunities for the community, but also job opportunities for the entire community. With the aquatics program on a Monday through Friday schedule, we're hoping that that's going to be an incentive to help with maybe lifeguards that normally would go over to the ravine. We're hoping that maybe even if we don't get enough certified in the local timeline, we can get some of those already certified lifeguards to maybe come over and help us out too. So we're really trying to think outside of the box in ways that we can overcome some of these obstacles that we've had in the past and be sure that we're reaching out to everyone that we can bring together to really pull this off and get the staffing that we need for it. In summary, we're excited that the community and the council has identified aquatics as an important program during the sales tax measure D20 discussions, and that this program, if approved, could be funded by D20. We're thankful to the high school for constructing the new pool and for working in partnership with us. We're thankful to the community, and we're hopeful that the council would approve this, and congratulations to the council for bringing back the aquatics program to review and to consider adding to the portfolio of recreational services for 2025, a win-win for quality of life and offering essential services. On slide 6, just the money part, that's never anyone's favorite, but we do have to put on here and want to make sure that we are clear on that the general fund expenditures of $41,000 and offsetting revenues of $30,000 for the summer of 2025 program are expected across fiscal year 2024-2025 and the 2025-2026 fiscal year.
Okay.
And questions?
All right, thank you very much for not being used to doing council presentations. You did a good job, so thank you.
Thank you.
I wanted, before we proceed to council questions, I want to note that we have a school board trustee in the audience, V. Pierce. I don't know if there's anything you wanted to say, or are you available for questions if we have them? Good, okay. Okay, you want to make a comment? Okay, go ahead. And if, I just want to make sure you're available for questions if council has them of you. So you should approach the podium, please.
Good evening, Mayor and council members. I'm so happy to be here this evening with you all. And I was happy to see the aquatics program implementation on the agenda. This is a long program that we've been working on. I remember taking my son to swim at the Atascadero High School pool in 2017 and him learning how to swim with his instructors there. And as was mentioned, our pool was completed last spring in 2024, and we just didn't have enough time to pull it all together to offer a swim program at that time. But we've always wanted to have the community come and enjoy and use the Atascadero High School Aquatic Center. So I just wanted to say that thank you to Jim Lewis, the city manager, council members, who were on our city schools committee, Mayor Bourbeau, Councilmember Newsom, and Councilmember Peak. This would not be possible without a partnership with the city and staff. We couldn't do this on our own, and I think this is a wonderful way of how showing how our different organizations and community works together so well. So thank you.
Thank you. Now, any questions from council, of staff, or school board? Go ahead. I was going to start here, but you got your hand up quick, so go. No. Okay, I'll start from my right this time. Councilmember Newsom.
No questions, but I'm super excited. I can't wait. Now I want a tour. City manager needs to hook us up next week.
No problem.
Councilmember Funk.
I too am super excited about this and really grateful to the work both of the city staff and the school board and school administration in getting this cooperative effort that's good for our community and improves public safety as well, because we want our children to be safe around the water of the community. One question, two. What's the minimum age for lifeguards, roughly?
Minimum age for lifeguards, I believe they have to be 15.
Okay, so
it's either 15 or 16. I think 15 for certain certifications, but I think as far as in like swim instruction, they've got to be a little higher. I don't have all of that completely memorized because I've never been the aquatics guru, but I definitely have plenty of resources and aquatics friends within the rec community that have helped with all that. But we will be sure that we have all of those certifications very clear marked out when we're going through the hiring process.
Great. I just saw that, you know, the PT18 is their, you know, code for the thing, and I thought make sure it's not just 18 years old.
No, that's just part-time worker, okay. 18, but not in reference to age. Yeah.
Great. Okay. And then was there thought given to the potential for doing something on the weekends, and that just wasn't workable to staff it?
At this time, just staffing constraints and the time frame that the school district, that the Atascadero High School has given us, is Monday through Friday from 12 to 4 is the time frame that we're working with for this year specifically. That's not to say that next year we're not going to expand and possibly try for more hours as well. I mean, we're just at the very beginning phases. We've not had this program for many years. Okay. We've not had the staffing for it for many years. I mean, we're talking pre-pandemic, so we're like almost starting from scratch. I mean, we are starting from scratch. So yeah, we'll be building back up, and we do plan to expand as much as we can as we first get the first base kind of rolling. Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Great. Mayor Pro Tem Darris.
Thank you. You know, I'm excited to see this happen. I've had a few people ask me about when or if the city's ever going to build a pool, and so I discussed as well, you know, kind of went over a few numbers, and then I talked to City Manager Lewis and realized I was way off. So it's not cheap. So having this type of partnership with the school in this state-of-the-art pool, I think is going to be great. So I like to, you know, obviously see some of the hours expanded at times, but I think this is a great opportunity, And hopefully it's going to make a lot of people happy to be able to get their kids to swimming. So I'm excited about it. Thanks for all your hard work and city and staff.
Yeah, of course. We're excited as well.
Yeah, thanks.
Councilmember Peak.
Yeah, what would the part-time worker do from September to February, 8 hours a week? And then what would they be doing from February to May for 27 hours a week?
Those numbers were very much thrown up in like a, this is what we believe might be happening, but those are definitely going to be adjusted as we kind of hone in a little more on things. Like I said before, I'm not an aquatics professional by all means at all. I've never even been a lifeguard myself. I'd watched a lot of Baywatch as a kid. And was interested at that time. However, I don't have all of that. And so really it was more of like, we need to bring staff on, and the aquatics coordinator, more specifically, that's the person that's gonna, they're gonna have all of those certifications. They're gonna have all of the knowledge and the experience that we need in knowing that, okay, when we're prepping for, I mean, there's a lot that goes into prepping for a season for any program specifically, but especially for aquatics, you have to make sure that you're keeping up to code, that you're keeping up to the latest and greatest in the new state laws that they are implementing, that they are always changing. So this person will have to work on creating not only just the base schedule of what our pie in the sky ideal schedule will be for programming, well then, okay, for this specific programming, if we get this amount of participants in this specific time frame, how many staffing does that mean we need to have? Because it's not just regular staffing, it's these are lifeguards, and there are lifeguard to participant ratios that we've got to make sure that we're on top of. And so this person is going to be very heavy on making sure that we are prepared for, you know, what the full schedule is. They've got to be in charge of keeping an eye on that budget and making sure that we have all of the equipment that we need leading up to it, in coming in maybe, you know, once a week here and there to come through and go through all of the equipment, organize the equipment after the end of the season's all over, making sure that we've got everything that we need, planning, building up, working on maybe not always just necessarily aquatics, but helping out with whatever other timeline things we have going on within the recreation department. But very specifically, their job is going to be to plan it, to input it into our registration system, to input it into Word documents that we are ready and prepared for when it's time to put together our rec guide, the recreation guide, our summer rec guide. We've just been working on all that. So ideally, they would have been on during this time of the year, the last few weeks, really dialing that all in, putting it together.
Councilmember Peak, well, I wanted not to interrupt, I apologize,
no, go for
but
it.
We'll be also working with other recreation, city recreation departments on their aquatics program with San Luis and Paso Robles as well. So as we look through this particular position, we'll make sure that we're maximizing their efforts for aquatics.
And as the years go on, we might find it more efficient to, maybe we don't need to have them on payroll for a couple months a year as we become more efficient with it.
Correct.
Definitely.
That's a work in progress.
Yeah, definitely.
And then a follow-up question. What's the idea of what this will cost families to swim for 2 hours a day? What would be the cost? And if there's like a monthly or a summer fee you can pay for?
I didn't bring that with me. I believe we were at like, I know in the years past, we were at, I think like $5 per rec swim for like the drop-in swim. Terry, do you have
I have it. I'm just
I believe the swim lessons, correct, which are usually like, you know, a few days within a week, you get about 3 days in 1 week. I think
the main question I'm hearing is, what's it going to cost to go swimming? Like just to take your kid to go swimming?
Oh, for just rec swim, it'll be about $5 a person.
And that's subsidized by this, you know, it could be more, but we're trying to make it as affordable as
possible. Yeah, we're trying to keep it affordable as we can. Basically, usually when we come up with our fees, it's very much what's going to just have us just break even and offset the cost so that we're not being, you know, so that we are being responsible or not irresponsible with the city funding.
In the past, we had like a punch pass, so it was like basically $10, 20 visits for $100, but it was like a punch pass type thing. So we'll be having a lot of different options for people. that's affordable.
All right, thank you. And I had a question in terms of, you know, this is courtesy of the school district, really, but I don't see in here an actual, like, us approving a formal agreement. I assume, just if nothing else for liability purposes, there must be some formal agreement that the city manager will be signing with the school district?
Yes, Mr. Butler and I are talking about that, but there will be, and I'm authorized to sign that.
Right, okay, got it. Okay, and council member asked my other question regarding the potential for Saturdays in the future. So no further questions here. I'd like to see if we have any public comment on this agenda item. Please approach the podium. And if anybody else would like to speak, please approach the podium as well so you don't have to walk over. So thank you. Go ahead.
I wasn't planning on speaking, and my allergies have gotten the best of me the last few days, so bear with me, please. My name is Kristen Andrews, and I am a proud parent of three children that go to San Benito Elementary. All my children participate at A-Town Water Polo Club, which is super exciting. My youngest is starting this summer. I also started coaching at A-Town Water Polo Club this last summer, and it's been a pleasure to coach our 10 and under children and our 12U children. And I just want to use my voice to kind of let the council know that I think our youth water polo program is going to start falling through the cracks. I'm super excited that the city is partnering with the high school, but my understanding is that the hierarchy is the high school gets priority, then the city gets priority, and youth sports, youth water polo specifically, is at the very bottom of that list. I know that the Conrad family, John Conrad, has established an amazing program. I think we support already 140 to 160 children over the summer months for youth water polo. And I think we're talking ages 6 to, I'm going to get this wrong, 6 to 14 or 6 to 16. As long as they can swim one lap down the pool, they're allowed to play. So I don't have a question for you today. I just kind of, as the gentleman earlier spoke, wanting to advocate for youth sports, and we have less pool space than there are fields here in Atascadero, if you can understand. This last winter, we had to have our kids go out to Morro Bay High School. The Morro Bay community was so grateful, were so grateful that they took us in, because we just couldn't get in the pool. So I'm, again, using my voice to say we're here, we're really excited to continue our program, and if we cannot continue the program in the capacity, you're not going to have a competitive high school water polo team. I saw the last slide of that presentation, you know, the proud water polo community that we've created here, it's fantastic, but we have to allow our youth sports, our water polo program in the pool to continue that as well. So that's all I had. Thank you.
Thank you. Actually, let's let the other speakers come forward first.
Good evening once again, Council Jeff Oslin. As a proud parent of an 8-year-old, I'm happy that we're going to have an aquatics program again in the summer for our youth. A couple suggestions would be, because I'm a working family and so is my wife, that if swim lessons were later in the afternoon than where we put our children during the day, one of us might be able to leave work earlier, have more flexibility to get them for swim lessons. And I think I speak for more than just my child. If things are in the middle of the day, it's very tough to leave work, take your child for a swim lesson at noon and come back. So if we could look at the schedule and maybe make it 3 o'clock and maybe offer lessons 2 days a week or 3 days a week, however we want to do that, it would be easier on the working parent. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Thank you for having me here. My name is Colin Marin. I'm a student athlete at Atascadero High School. I'd like to add on to our first speaker's statement. I'm sorry, ma'am, I forgot your name. But I'd just like to know how you are going to address holding all of these events in the Atascadero High School pool while also allowing for all of the teams that are there, the high school teams, the youth teams, the middle school teams, even the non-water polo teams. I know I play football. We were discussing having swim days, how you would accommodate those practices still occurring. That's all. Thank you.
Colin, by the way, is a Troop 123 Life Scout who's here earning his citizenship in the Community Merit Badge. So this is an Eagle Scout requirement for him to speak. So that was...
So we picked a good topic for him then, or he picked a good day to come. Excellent. All right, any other public speakers for making public comment on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll ask staff to come back up, and could you address, to the extent you can, either yourself or Ms. Banish, a couple of those questions?
I can take the questions. Yeah, I got it. Thanks, Larice. The water polo team for the high school and addressing the younger grades and things, we can work with the high school on that. It's a popular program having the pool back, obviously, with all of the different teams that are going to be needing to have the pool and all the different schedules and trying to accommodate those. So we will work with the high school to do that. That's part of our scheduling right now is 12 to 4. But as we get into this program and the staffing and everything that comes with it, then we can also look for later times to work with the high school on that and just really kind of accommodate all of the demands that are out there.
Thank you. And yeah, I think, I mean, this is our first year back at this, and like I said, almost from scratch, and it's, you know, there will be room for refinement.
Absolutely, and we will work on that for sure.
Okay, all right, I'm gonna bring it back to council and see if we have any further questions, discussion, or are we ready for a motion?
I think this is awesome, and I'm happy to move approval.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Councilmember Funk, a second by Councilmember Peak. Any discussion? Okay, let's do roll call.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Peak?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Daris?
Yes.
Mayor Barbeau?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
All right, excellent, thank you. And thank you again to the school district for this cooperative endeavor where we serve you serve more citizens than we do actually, but we largely serve the same community, and we appreciate the school district joining us in doing this. Okay, we're gonna move on to our next item. Council announcements and committee reports, and I will start on my left with Councilmember Peak.
Last Wednesday, I attended the RAC, the Water Resource Advisory Committee. The meat and potatoes of the meeting was a presentation by Santec on SB 552, the water system consolidation, and kind of the cost and opportunity cost analysis of joining smaller water systems with our larger ones, generally struggling ones with non-struggling ones. It's pretty interesting, the amount of private wells and public water systems that are in the county. There's quite a large number that I was unaware of, and it was a really, really awesome meeting.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Daris.
Thank you. I've had no meetings since we last met. Next week, Air Pollution Control District meets, and so does CAPSLO. We'll report on that at the following council meeting after that.
Thank you. Councilmember Funk?
Yes. Next week, I've got the Executive Committee of the Homeless Services Oversight Council. I also, upcoming at the end of the month, will be participating with Councilmember Daris and Councilmember Peak in Sacramento at the City Leaders Summit with the League of California Cities.
Thank you. Councilmember Newsom?
I had a SLOCOG meeting last Tuesday. We went over some transportation allocations, and then we reviewed the Regional Road Safety Action Plan, which is set to go out to more public outreach and prioritizing local projects in the community. No other meetings after that.
All right, thank you. And I have had no meetings since our last meeting. Over tomorrow, I will be attending our Integrated Waste Management Authority meeting, where we will be discussing replacing our executive director, Mr. Peter Cron, who is retiring on April 17th. Okay, with that, I believe we will move on to see if there are any individual determinations or actions on the part of individual council members. Okay, seeing none, then we are ready to adjourn. So thank you all. Thank you for coming.